I do want to apologize. I woke up yesterday and my head was thumping and my voice didn't work. And now my voice works a little and my head hasn't been thumping as bad. So we're going to keep some water here and we'll go with the handheld so we don't cough in the mic. What do people see? We've been in this series of Nehemiah, and I got to tell you, I've really enjoyed studying and taking a look at this small book in the Bible. In fact, I know most of you have had the same experience, and we've heard great comments as we've gone through this series. For me, and maybe you as well, I just thought that Nehemiah was the guy who built the wall. And that's about all he did. Not a real big deal. He doesn't get the cool factor like Noah or Moses or Paul or the disciples in Sunday school. He's only Nehemiah, the cupbearer. The cupbearer to the king. And at the beginning of this series, we learned a lot about that job, that he just has to taste the king's wine to make sure he doesn't get poisoned. I did not think that was a real glamorous job, and I definitely in Sunday school, when we heard about this guy, didn't want to be that guy. Because at any moment of his life, he could be taken out when someone wanted to kill the king. But after studying this passage this week and going through this series, I hope I can be like Nehemiah. And I think that's what's resonating with a lot of you, like, how can we be like Nehemiah today? It's more than just building a wall. Nehemiah 5, 1 through 13 is where we're going to find our scripture here this morning. So if you'd like to follow along or look on the screen, that'd be great. About this time, some of the men and women and their wives raised a cry of protest against their fellow Jews. They were saying, "We have such large families. We need more food to survive." Others said, "We have mortgaged our fields, vineyards, and homes to get food during the famine." And others said, "We have had to borrow money on our fields and vineyards to pay our taxes. We belong to the same family as those who are wealthy, and our children are just like theirs. Yet we must sell our children into slavery just to get enough money to live. We have already sold some of our daughters, and we are helpless to do anything about it. For our fields and vineyards are already mortgaged to others. When I heard their complaint, I was very angry. And after thinking it over, I spoke out against these nobles and officials. I told them, 'You are hurting your own relatives by charging interest when they borrow money.' Then I called a public meeting to deal with the problem. And at that meeting, I said to them, 'We are doing all we can to redeem our Jewish relatives who have had to sell themselves to pagan foreigners, but you are selling them back into slavery again. How often must we redeem them?' And they had nothing to say in their defense. Then I pressed further, 'What are you doing is not right. Should you not walk in the fear of our God in order to avoid being mocked by enemy nations? I myself, as well as my brothers and my workers, have been lending the people money and grain. But now let us stop this business of charging interest. You must restore their fields, vineyards, olive groves, and homes to them this very day and repay the interest you charged when you lent them the money, grain, new wine, and olive oil.' They replied, 'We will give back everything and demand nothing more from the people. We will do as you say.' Then I called the priests and made the nobles and officials swear to do what they had promised. I shook out my robes and said, 'If you fail to keep your promise, may God shake you like this from your homes and from your property.' The whole assembly responded, 'Amen.' And they praised the Lord, and the people did as they promised." My question this morning is, why do they listen to this guy? Why are they willing to follow this guy? 90 years, people have been refusing to build the walls and nobody even thought of it. So why Nehemiah? Let's look back to his first role as cupbearer. Remember, I didn't think that was a very glamorous job because you might die. But let's think about it. The king had to trust him with his life. He was like the Secret Service agent that protects the president, like Kevin Costner in The Bodyguard. King Xerxes had utmost trust in Nehemiah. But why did he have that? Nehemiah was from a foreign land. Why would the king want a Jewish person, a foreign person from a group of people which he had captured along the way, looking out for his life? It just doesn't work that way. You don't trust your life with someone who's playing for the other team. It just doesn't happen that way in life. But when it's God's vision and your willingness to follow God's plan, the impossible happens. You see, Nehemiah got to be the cupbearer because of his integrity. He was a trustworthy man. Whoever recommended to the king or the king himself knew this long before giving Nehemiah the position of cupbearer. Nehemiah influenced people long before he had the position of cupbearer to the king. People in the right places must have saw how Nehemiah lived his life before he was given the position. Andy Stanley uses a story in his life in his book, Visioneering. When he was 20 years old, he went to work as an intern in youth ministry at his dad's church. He says he did not know anything about youth ministry. And he goes on to say when he was meeting with the youth pastor, Sid, and trying to figure out what he should do, and what, and they were having a heart-to-heart conversation about youth ministry, Sid looked at him and said, "Andy, you are a leader, and I need you to lead." And Andy said, "Sid, you're the youth minister." Andy said, "I will never forget his response afterwards." Sid said, "There's a difference between having a position and having influence. I have a position, but they will follow you because of your influence. Now I need you to use your influence and lead. Don't be afraid. Lead." If you've been following along in this series, we've got a little handout there in your bulletin with a little fill-in-the-blanks if you want to continue to do that. And our first point in our outline is this: influence is far more important to the success of your vision than that of the position you might hold. You see, Nehemiah started out on his journey with a vision, but his ability to influence others is what carried him to move others forward into acting to build the wall. Andy Stanley goes on to say in his book, "Influence is a funny thing. It's hard to define and it's hard to describe. But you know when somebody has it, and you know when somebody doesn't." I'm sure you all know people in your life who have had a huge influence on your life along the way. These are people who see the God-given vision in your life. They are people who can paint a picture and encourage you to strive for the best. And they can move you from point A to point B. You didn't care about the title or the position that they held. You didn't care what degree they got at college or even what college they went to. You didn't care if they had extra letters in front of their name or extra letters behind their name. It was just something about them that drew you close to them and wanted them to pour their life into yours. These people in your life just didn't talk the talk, but they walked the walk. Which brings us to our next fill-in-the-blank. The credibility that you earn when you walk the walk is irreplaceable. No amount of charisma, no amount of communication skills, no amount of riches, degrees, talents, or positions can make up for the lack of inconsistency between your walk and your talk. For most people, it takes a lifetime to build that credibility and influence on others, and is almost lost in moments when the talk doesn't line up with the walk. Think about your parents, for example. Does this thought of walking the walk and talking the talk bring up thoughts of respect and integrity? Or does this bring up wounds of little respect for them? My guess is that if you have a high respect for your parents, they've had a huge influence on your life. And if you find yourself highly influenced by them, and your walk through life has been deeply impacted by what they've encouraged or told you to do. But if you have a little respect for your parents, you probably found a lot of inconsistencies in how they lived, by how they talked and talked, but didn't walk the walk. This is how powerful walking the walk has on us, Albert Schweitzer says in a quote. "Example is not the main thing in influencing others. It's the only thing." Nehemiah challenged the most powerful people in his community. Remember, the governors all before him could not get the wall built. For 90 years, they did not have any walls to protect them. The people pretty much settled for just walking around the rubble and the broken down walls. It became part of their norm. Nehemiah challenged the most powerful people in the Jerusalem city. He challenged the people who had positions before he got there. He challenged the people with money. He challenged basically all the nobles, all the officials that were there before he arrived. And when he challenges them, it says in verse 8, they're kind of waiting for his response here. And here's what their response was, verse 8b. And they had nothing to say in their defense. You see, the nobles and the officials, the high, mighty people in the town, they didn't know what to say after Nehemiah challenged them, the cupbearer. In fact, the NIV says they kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. The nobles and the officials, the people with a lot of money in high places, all were speechless. And after Nehemiah got done speaking to them, they could find no words. So this is what they came up with. In verse 12, they replied, "We will give back everything and demand nothing more from the people. We will do as you say." Then I called the priests and made the nobles and officials swear to what they had promised. I shook out the folds of my robes and said, "If you fail to keep your promise, may God shake you like this from your homes and from your properties." I don't know about you, but I grew up watching the A-Team on TV. And this reminds me of kind of like Mr. T, right? I pity the fool, right? I mean, you know, he gets up in their face and says, "I pity the fool who comes against me." Nehemiah had such great influence on the people. Mr. T was just huge. You didn't want to mess with him, right? But Nehemiah looked right at him and go, "Don't do this. Don't do this." And the whole assembly responded, "Amen." And they praised the Lord, and the people did as they had promised. Let's take a look at how he did this. How in the world was Nehemiah, the cupbearer, the guy who was able to do this? He gives us a little window we can see into his life here as he goes on. This is almost seems like it's a little footnote here in backing up his challenge to the nobles and the officials. In verse 14 it says, "For the entire 12 years that I was governor of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of my reign of King Xerxes, neither I nor my officials drew on our official food allowance. The former governors, in contrast, had laid heavy burdens on the people. They demanded a daily ration of food and wine besides 40 pieces of silver. Even their assistants took advantage of the people. But because I feared God, I did not act that way. I also devoted myself to working on the wall and refusing to acquire any land. And I required all my servants to spend time working on the wall. And I asked for nothing. Even though I regularly fed 150 Jewish officials at my table, besides all the visitors from the land, the provisions I paid each day included one ox, six choice sheep, goats, a large number of poultry, and every 10 days we needed a large supply of kinds of wine. Yet I refused to claim the governor's food allowance because the people already carried a heavy burden. Remember, O my God, all that I have done for these people, and bless me for it." Did you catch that in verse 15? Nehemiah says all the guys before him laid heavy burdens on the people. They demanded lots of food, silver, and took advantage of the people. They used their position to try and lord it over the people. I don't know if you've ever had a coach like that, where a coach just is the high person in authority and you're supposed to respect him. But when the coach just all of a sudden just screams at you to play harder and do this and everything like that, it's kind of hard to really play for somebody that you think is not just as ethical and it has the integrity that you're looking for. Or have you ever heard your parents tell you the rules and just say, "Because I told you so, I'm your parent," and never explained or helped you understand why? The position of authority is not what people want to follow. No, people want to be coached and led by people who demonstrate a heartfelt commitment to what they are doing, not just winning games. Kids want to be parented by people who believe in them and want them to become all that God wants them to be. And if there's any inclination that the motives are messed up and that this is for personal gain, the people, the kids who you're trying to influence will pick up on this mighty fast and will not be influenced by you. You see, right away, starting in verse 14, Nehemiah reminds us, he's not bragging here. He's just kind of given the facts. "For 12 years, I was governor. Neither I nor my officials drew on any food allowance. He devoted himself to working on the wall and refused to acquire land. And basically asked for nothing, even though he could have." No wonder the nobles and the officials backed down from arguing with Nehemiah in the verses previous. No wonder they were speechless. Their walk could no way match up with what Nehemiah was saying. The only governor in 90 years that could say that was Nehemiah. He had the position, exactly like the rest, to do the same things the governors did before him. But he chose not to, and this is why the wall was being built. He had walked the walk, and his talk matched up with his walk from the day he arrived in Jerusalem to rebuild. His life demonstrated and lined up with his God-given vision. Nehemiah was committed to doing what was right. Nehemiah had influence on the people he had following him, and he could have easily went down the road many governors before him did, and took it all for personal gain. This is where we lose so many people, so many great people that are leaders. They get off course because they lose their focus on the God vision for their life, and they start to look at the prize or the benefits they can have for personal gain. In fact, I think that's probably one of the most important things that we can get out of this lesson today. And so I'm going to repeat that. Many people get off course because they lose their focus on the God vision for their life. And they start to look at the prize or the benefits they could have for personal gain. This week's the Spencer Fair, and I was out there showing cattle with my girls. And I knew what I had to preach on, and all of a sudden it became kind of a reality to me. I enjoy showing cattle with the girls because of the daddy-daughter times we can have, the driving to my brother's farm on the day off or on the weekends to go work with the cattle. And for most of the time when we're out there just working with the cattle and getting them ready and washing them and blow-drying them, all that stuff, there's not much tension around that. But somehow, when you go to the fair, and if anybody saw me at the fair, my emotions get a little more wound up. Tension starts to rise, and I start to focus on the prize. In fact, Danny came by to say hi, and I was right in the middle of grooming this one to make it look the best possible right before we came in the ring. And I started looking at the prize and the benefits that Shaler and Camden would get from winning. And let me just say, I don't think competition is not a bad or unhealthy thing. I don't think it's something that we should steer away from. But for me, I started to feel this was more about winning the trophy or doing well than hanging out with my girls and letting them enjoy the fair. This vision I have in raising my two daughters and the relationship we have by doing it started to take a back seat. You see, we had a pretty good cow this year. It's been doing really well in a lot of the fairs that we have taken her. And this is kind of the big one that you gun for, the Clay County Fair. And I was already seeing, you know, reserve grand champion, grand champion. And I was already looking at that. And I saw myself thinking more about the trophy than the big picture of why I do this with the girls. You see, there's rules in showing cattle, and they have these rules to try to make it fair and everything. But we all know when we get into competitive situations, all of a sudden we can kind of like, you know, just jeopardize the rules there and kind of like make it a little bit, well, we don't have to quite follow that. And what you start to see is you see people follow the rules but not always follow the rules. To be more accurate, the rules are followed loosely depending on how it benefits you. And we see this when we have this competitiveness. But by compromising on the rules, I would be going against my vision of raising daughters with integrity and moral beliefs. It's easy to get caught up or sidetracked into doing what is best for you, especially when it comes to competitions. In fact, as we were standing there, somebody came up to tell me about their football experience. There's a dad in our church that coaches football, and his son is on this football team, and they had to play another team this past week. And there's a rule in this little man football, they're about this high, right? There's a rule that you can only be so many pounds to carry the ball. Because if you're bigger than that, you just steam over everybody, and then people get hurt, and they just keep scoring touchdowns. And this dad was telling me this as he was talking with us there, and he was frustrated because the other team was clearly bigger. They were about this high, and their tallest, biggest kid was this high, and that kid got to carry the ball. And during the game, he said, you know, he thought to himself, you know what, let us just put our big players in. Let us just put the people that weighed a little too much, you know. Let them carry the ball. But as we sat there and talked at the fair, he too said, what would I be teaching my son? Truett Cathy says it like this: you have to be careful about what you say. More importantly, you have to be careful about what you do. You never know how or when you influence people, especially children. And how fitting is that this morning as we celebrate a baptism, as we look at parents starting their new journey out here, starting their journey, showing little Jacob who Jesus is, and grandpas and grandmas sitting in the front row, and aunts and uncles and everything, how we influence, how we walk this walk will say more than what we talk to little Jacob. Leaders must be willing to do the right thing, the morally right thing to do to carry out the God-given vision. There's no shortcuts, no personal gain, and no compromise. Nehemiah could not take stuff from the people. Why? Because it compromised his moral values and his beliefs in why he wanted to build the wall in the first place. And so I'm going to give you a little recipe. What does it take to influence people? What does it take to actually come alongside people and have people following you? There's three ingredients for influencing others. And the first is character. The second is sacrifice. And the third is time. Our first word, character. Webster's Dictionary says the way someone thinks, feels, and behaves. As Christians, it's important to have high moral values, and we are to be influencers in the world. The world around us is watching. God did not give us the platform to live a life that the world would live. He called us to live a life of moral value. He called us to live this life so that we would be a demonstration to others in the way that we live and the way they should live. Our character is simply doing the right thing God calls us to do, not what the world says is okay. I had a mom share a letter with me that she wrote to her son, and I think it was amazing, and I would like to share you pieces with you this morning. She writes, "It kind of makes me sad and or puzzled me that you didn't think we would be any questions or problems with a girl staying overnight in your dorm room with you. Either we didn't make that clear enough as parents, or maybe because we live in such a free living culture today. Our culture basically says, do whatever you want, doesn't matter how it affects anyone, but appearances do matter. We know you are making great choices and that you are an adult and in charge of your life, but we also appreciate that you still allow us to guide you and speak into your life and other adults that we value to advise you also. We are proud and impressed by the witness you have left and by the lives you are leading in this tough world. You think no one is looking, but they are. You too could be able to stay in the room and everything be above board, but others, some of your Christian friends struggle in this area. To put your reputation on the line like this and your reputation as a couple for the speculations is not worth the damage done to your witness. As Christians, we are called to live in this world and not be of this world. If you are saying that appearances don't matter, that no one will notice, then you are buying into the lies that Satan loves to tell us. After your faith in Christ, the only thing that you can count on is your character." She went on to say, "This choice may seem minor today in the world that we live in, but it's the first step in damaging your character. We see in the world we live in that pastors and other visible Christians are falling in public daily, and the national news due to poor choices that lead to sin and disaster. So why go there? I know you just had this awkward conversation last month with me, so I'm sure you're loving this one. But don't you think that if more people would have these awkward conversations with their kids and people they care about, then we would not have the damage we see today? You are respecting and protecting your relationship and witness now and to your future relationship and marriage with whomever God blesses you with. Dad and I feel so strongly about this that if you truly can't find someone for her to stay with, we will pay for her hotel. Just let me know. We are proud of you and the way you are walking and the way you have conducted yourself in your dating life. So we want to support you however we can. Love you, Mom and Dad." Men and women of character requires us to do the right things. Surrender to God's standards, values, and the principles He set out for us. You see, Nehemiah gives us his answer on why he never compromised his character. And it was this, it's the end of verse 15. "Because I feared God, I did not act that way." The first thing when we look at this ingredients of how to influencing others, we have to have this character, this sense of when no one else is looking, what is our character going to look like? The second ingredient to influencing others is to sacrifice. Webster's Dictionary says the act of giving up something that you want to keep, especially in order to get or do something else or to help someone. Sacrifice is the clearest demonstration of your commitment to what could be. Personal sacrifice for the sake of the cause, your potential for influence escalates incredibly. Sacrifice will often silence your critics or those who are opposing you. Back to the story of the mom's letter to the son. Did you catch it? They were willing to pay money to get a hotel room for the girlfriend to stay when she visited him at college. Why is that? Because they believed so much in the vision and the protection of their son's character, they knew all what they had tried to do and work for in their son's life as they raised him, and they were not willing to watch it be destroyed. Nehemiah also knew this part of sacrifice. He did not take money for the building of the wall, even though he could have. And he did not, in fact, he paid for things that they needed on the wall. Our last ingredient of influencing others is time. Influencing others is not something achieved overnight. It's not something you can just make happen. The mom in the letter written to her son did not just wake up that morning and decide she could go and give some advice to her son. She has spent all her life as a mom speaking into his life. This was probably not a surprise to her son at all that day he opened the email from his mom. This has been the norm all his life, and that is why the son valued what was written to him. Little Jacob has had a long history right here. Grandpa and grandma who love the Lord, who have been raising their kids, Danny and Liz, to love the Lord as well. And so Jacob is here this morning. Why? Because of the history that's sitting in this front row. It's not something you just wake up and say, hey, this would be a good idea for my kid. This would be a grand thing. This is something we work at. This takes time. This takes sacrifice, and it takes character. Nehemiah just was the cupbearer, right, when he started this story. But the king granted him to go build the wall. He put in his time working alongside the people to build the wall, and he was there for 12 years and changed the people, not with just building the wall, but also their spiritual lives as well. So I wanted to close with this. Most of you know my love for Chick-fil-A. If you don't, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A, okay? And I'm not only just in love with the sandwich. I think the sandwich is really good, and I really love their waffle fries dipped in the Chick-fil-A sauce. But it's bigger than that, people. Chick-fil-A is bigger than that. On Monday, it was kind of a sad day for me because the Nehemiah of our day went to be with God. Truett Cathy died at the age of 93. Kathy was a devout Southern Baptist who taught Sunday school to 13-year-old boys for more than 50 years. An extension of the founder's faith and the clearest example of incorporating biblical principles into the workplace. All Chick-fil-A restaurants, without exception, operate with the closed-on-Sunday policy. Rare within the food industry is this ever noticed. This policy allows employees a day for family, worship, fellowship, or rest, and also underscores Kathy's desire to put principles and people ahead of profits. Chick-fil-A will remain privately held and closed on Sundays. Kathy was often quoted as saying this, "I'd like to be remembered as one who kept my priorities in the right order. You see, we live in a changing world, but we need to be reminded that the important things have not changed. I have always encouraged my restaurant operators and team members to give back to the local community. We should be more about taking care of people than selling chicken. We should be a part of the customers' lives and the communities in which we serve." What do people see in your life? And what will they say when you're gone?